This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, Race Again. Frieda Liu here and John Hagedorn from Better Trading Solutions sitting right in front of me.
Hi there.
This is our Cultural Intelligence series and we're on to Session 6, which is Culture and Reasoning. Now, what happens when two individuals with different patterns of reasoning find themselves disagreeing over certain business issues? And yeah.
All right. Well, we've been talking about how language affects the way we think. And as a result, the way we think affects our cultural values, and then it affects our outward behavior. It's a chain, doink, 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 one thing after the next. But today we're going to be focusing on this idea of reasoning and how it's going to affect the way that we do business together. The first thing we have to understand, all right, is that, okay, different cultures are going to reason differently, and we can categorize the way we reason into about three different groups. The first type of reasoning that we have is what we call inductive reasoning, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this is where when we think and when we explain things to other people, we're going to start with our conclusion and then kind of spiral outwards. So if you were to ask me a question about my opinion, for example, I would come right out and tell you my opinion and then tell you why I think that way. This is not uncommon among Americans, all right?
Hence last week, the Germans and the Americans.
Right, exactly. And we're going to talk about that again today. This allows opposing viewpoints to exist side by side. Like in the United States, you have a lot of opposing viewpoints right now. But on things like stem cell research, you go one way or the other. The death penalty, you go one way or the other. Obamacare, you go one way or the other. And you state your opinion and you hold to it, right? But this also allows for conflicting perspectives to clash, and we get disagreement as a result. And sometimes because of this pattern or this way of thinking, people will have the perception that those who hold this particular way of reasoning are extreme or very, very opinionated, right? Mm. But it does allow for open debate, right, without question, and often results in, okay, you think what you think, I would think what I think, we agree to disagree, right? In addition to inductive reasoning, the second pattern that we're looking at is deductive reasoning, and this works the opposite way, where if you were to ask me a question about my opinion, first I would explain with a lot of background, give you a lot of data, give you a lot of facts, and then come to a conclusion that says, therefore, this is the way I feel. And when I'm explaining things or when I'm understanding things, this is also the way I'll do research. Mm. Before I come to any particular conclusion about anything, I'm going to go out there and get the facts first. And then I'm going to reach my definite conclusion. Unlike if I'm inductive, I'll come to my conclusion first and then try to prove it.
You see, here I am making a value judgment that the deductive reasoning is the right way to go.
There is no right way. There's no wrong way. There's just different ways of going about it. In fact, if you look at scientific processes, I mean, science says we have to go about this deductively. Let's get the evidence first and then come to a conclusion. But then in science as well, you have people who come up with a hypothesis that says, okay, here's our hypothetical situation. Now let's go out and see if this hypothesis holds or not.
True.
And if it does or if it doesn't, we've still made scientific advancement. But those are two completely different approaches, right? Now, I'm going to go out on a limb here because, again, we're generalizing here and perhaps overgeneralizing in some areas because individuals make up cultures. Let's not forget that. But the Europeans and South Americans tend to be more deductive. Let's think about this first and then come to a conclusion. And we're going to see how that plays out in business in just a moment. The third pattern of reasoning is what we call holistic reasoning. And let's attribute this to the Asians and the Middle Easterners, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because what happens now is things are less linear than the other two. And we had talked previously about Arabic culture being more contextual, that we pick up a lot of information from the surroundings in addition to what the person is saying. And this is what happens in holistic reasoning as well. Less linear, more contextual. And the conclusions we come to are based on the consideration of many, many different things from many, many different directions. We take everything into account. And instead of arriving at a conclusion, we're very comfortable saying, well, we just don't know yet. It'll come to us. And it can be slow. You know, the arriving at a conclusion can be slow. But then again, who's in a hurry? Huh? So when it comes to us, it'll come to us, but it will come to us, right? So these are the three different patterns that we have, inductive, deductive, and holistic. Now, your question goes back to this. How does this affect business issues? Let's put each of these together, one with the next. And we'll start with inductive and deductive and go back to what we had been talking about last week with the Daimler-Chrysler merger. Because the Americans tend to be very inductive. Germans, on the other hand, more deductive. Inductive means that when we solve a problem, this is what we're talking about here, is a business issue, problem solving. When we solve a problem from an inductive reasoning perspective, we're going to go trial and error. Here's an idea. Let's try it out. Oh, that didn't work. Here's another idea. Let's try that out. And sooner or later, it's going to work as we learn from each trial. The Germans, on the other hand, because they're more deductive, are going to plan. And then when they think they've got it, then they'll go ahead and execute it, and it will be right. And very often very precise and right on the mark. And we could take the same amount of time going either way, and we could invest the same amount of money going either way, and we could learn just as much going either way. It's just that we're going about them in two different ways. And that's why what was one of the cultural clashes that we came up with when we spoke about Daimler-Chrysler last week. A second area where patterns of reasoning are going to affect the way we do business is in negotiating, which we'll talk about next week. Mm-hmm. Just to give you an early example now, a little teaser here, the French tend to be more deductive. The Chinese tend to be more holistic, all right? So if you are deductive, you are oriented towards a result. You know that everything that you're collecting here is going to bring you to a conclusion. That is the purpose of our negotiation here. Chinese, however, since they tend to be more holistic, will make their decision when all is known. Hmm. Progress is going to be a lot slower. Deadlines are going to be less relevant. And this can cause impatience on the part of the party that's negotiating with the Chinese, especially if we are oriented towards a conclusion. And impatience in negotiation is never a good thing. All right? Finally, the last area where we can look at how this affects the way we do business is in business development. And this example comes from personal experience. And this time we're matching up the inductive with the holistic. Yeah. I'm American, myself, inductive. My goals are already set, all right, in business development. The Egyptians that I'm working with, Arabic culture, contextual, holistic, goal, right? Goal, we mean we have one? Oh, okay. All right, great idea. Nice thing to think about. I was hired by the Binational Fulbright Commission, funded by USAID, to come into some three Egyptian universities and develop what they call ESP centers, English for Specific Purposes, so that the universities could make money autonomously, separate from the university, by going out and doing English language classes for specific businesses, banks, the tourism industry, etc. And my goals were laid out for me when I got my job. You have to develop this center, this center, this center. You're going to have this huge budget to get in there and do it. And I relied on help from my Egyptian counterparts. But I would give them an assignment. And the first thing that I learned is if you give an assignment, you have to give a specific date and time that this is going to be completed. Right? And even then, you know, if it's finished, you know, well, if it's finished, it's beautiful. It's well done. It's excellent. It's thorough. But it's late. Count on it. It's going to be late because there's just no concept of like a work plan that's leading us towards a specific objective or a specific goal. Everything comes. It kind of falls into place eventually. Each day is a new day. It's not, you know, a step-by-step process that we're trying to achieve something here. Each day is something new. We go to work. Oh, another new day. What's on the agenda, you know? So that's what it's like. That's what happens when these different patterns of reasoning come into business with different cultures in play.
All right. Is there a relationship between culturally influenced reasoning and culture-based values? I will discuss that in just a moment with John Hagedorn from Better Trading Solutions. Race a Game, BFM 89.9. Good morning, this is Frida Liu, and you're listening to Race Your Game, and John Hagedorn from Better Trading Solutions is here. It's our Cultural Intelligence series. It's about culture and reasoning. Very interesting discussions on inductive reasoning, deductive reasoning, and holistic reasoning, and how we reason. Now, is there a relationship between culturally influenced reasoning and culture-based values?
Yeah, well, clearly there is a relationship. And notice I answered that question very inductively, right? But let's have some fun with this one, all right? Because let's take a form of reasoning that we have in every culture. Let's look at classification. In other words, how does a culture determine how we classify things? What kinds of things do we put where? What goes together? We're going to play a little game here, you and me.
Okay.
Listeners, check this out and listen in, all right? I have five sets of things here, and you have to tell me. Each of these five has three things, and I'll read them off, and you have to tell me which of the two things in the set go together.
Okay.
All right? Here's number one. Don't say it. Write it down first, and then I'll come back and check your answers, okay?
Yes, teacher.
Here's the first thing. Number one, monkey, rhinoceros, banana.
Mm-hmm.
What goes together? Number two, uniform, policeman, teacher.
Hmm.
What goes together? Number three, milk, fish, water.
Hmm.
Number four, chalk, pencil, blackboard. And finally, number five, Beijing, Malaysia, China.
Oh.
All right?
Okay.
Your answer for number one, monkey, rhinoceros, banana. What goes together?
You see, monkey, banana.
Monkey, banana. Number two, uniform, policeman, teacher.
Uniform, policeman.
Okay, you're consistent. Number three, milk, fish, water.
Okay, fish and water.
Uh-huh. Number four, chalk, pencil, blackboard.
Chalk and blackboard.
Uh-huh. Number five, Beijing, Malaysia, China.
Beijing, China.
Okay, you're consistent all the way down. We're looking at two different types of classification here. The first type of classification is what we call taxonomic, and this is according to genus or according to type. Right? The second type of classification, which you have nicely demonstrated consistently for all five of these, is what we call thematic classification, where we're not going according to type, but according to relationship.
Okay.
Strangely enough, okay, most Westerners are going to be more taxonomic.
Okay.
According to type, whereas most, let's call them Easterners, are going to be more thematic.
Hmm.
According to relationship. And one of the reasons for this, let's go back to our scales once again. Remember, we talked about our five scales. Let's look at the one for individual societies versus collective societies.
Hmm.
Collective cultures, as those that exist mostly in the East, are more likely to be more relationship-oriented and, as a result, to be more thematic in the way that we classify things. So as you gave me those answers there, I wouldn't be surprised if most of our listeners also had the same answers that you did.
Being Asians?
Correct.
So how would people make that connection, say, with the first one, the monkey, rhino, banana?
Monkey and rhinoceros are both animals. A banana is not an animal. That's a surprise to you?
Okay. Let's go with number two.
Number two, policemen and teacher are both professions. A uniform is not a profession. Milk and water are both liquids. Chalk and pencil are both writing implements. Malaysia and China are both countries. So this is how we classify according to type.
Wow.
Yeah. And that those would be the obvious answers to me and probably to millions and millions of other people on the other side of the globe. So how does this affect the way we do business? Because now think about this. Huh. Think about how a simple act of reasoning like classification is going to affect our internal values and the way we do things, all right? Imagine how this is going to determine, let's say, where we put things and where we group things, organizational structures and hierarchy, all right? How do we classify that? Secondly, departmentalization of different job tasks.
Right.
Where do we put them? All right. And third, here's just a very simple example. In manufacturing, how do we organize the parts department? What goes together? Where do we put things?
Where is the relationship in the parts?
That's right. Is there a relation here, relationship because they both go on the engine, or is there a type because they're both nuts and bolts or whatever the case may be? So this can have a profound effect on the way we do business just because of the way we think and reason.
All right. Okay. Is the Asian concept of enlightenment related to all at once reasoning?
I could answer this question three different ways.
Okay.
I could answer it inductively and say yes or no and explain why.
Right.
Or I could answer it deductively and give you all my reasoning and then give you a yes or a no. Or I could answer it holistically and just sit here and wait for the answer to come to me.
Right? Under the Bodhi tree.
Yeah. But that's right. See, this is why under the Bodhi tree, this is why the concept of enlightenment probably originates with holistic thinking.
Mm.
Because here in Asia, holistic thinking is more Asian. And here in Asia, we have our ascetics.
We talk about karma.
That's right. And we have, although in the past, it was the the monks who were more in the West with the Catholic monks. But now the monks are all in the East, you know, the Buddhist monks. And we have meditation and enlightenment, and how meditating is more of a an Eastern thing. You know, and it's made its way into the West, but it's still originated here. This, however, I think it's kind of an ill-conceived concept because in the West, you have this idea that says you don't have to work hard. You just have to think hard in order to get what you want, if, you know, if enlightenment is the key. But that's ill-conceived because enlightenment, true, I mean, we have enlightenment here that we arrive at holistically. But enlightenment is not exclusive to holistic thinkers. Take Newton and the apple. He was British, all right? And he saw, well, according to legend, he saw the apple fall, and that triggered this whole idea of gravity, right? We have Archimedes in the bathtub, and he was Greek, another Western, you know, old Western, ancient Western, right? He had this problem that he had to solve, and it was when the mind was clear that he immersed himself into his bathtub that he said, "Eureka," right? All of a sudden, it came to him, right? And I don't know if you know Philo Farnsworth. Do you know who he is?
No, I don't, but the name is familiar.
Philo Farnsworth came up with the concept for how TV would work.
Oh.
Yeah, while he was plowing a field of potatoes. Yeah, because he the back and forth motion of the till kind of inspired him to think that, you know, a beam would scan an image line by line, and then that's how he came up with the concept TV. Now, of course, he was not a potato farmer to come up with that. His mind was prepared. And enlightenment, I mean, enlightenment is a eureka moment, but it comes, like Louis Pasteur said, chance favors the prepared mind. So if your mind is all set and ready and relaxed and ready to go, that idea of enlightenment could happen to anybody at any time. And I guess this is a nice thing for holistic thinkers to remember, is that it might not come to you yet, but if your mind is prepared, it will.
John Hagedorn from Better Trading Solutions. Next week in our Cultural Intelligence series is Culture and Negotiations. And I know we're going to talk about East and West as well there. Race Game, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.